Good evening. On July 24th, 2002, around 9:30 p.m. in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, nine miners were trapped underneath 200 feet of earth in a coal mine. A nearby older mine that had been filled with tons of water had been breached. Now, this water had forced these miners to go into a dead-end shaft that was about an 18 by 70 foot air pocket, that the only light that they had was that of their helmets. They rapped on the rock ceiling nine taps every 10 minutes, hoping someone using specialized equipment could hear them. They could see the water slowly coming up towards them, and their foreman gave it to them straight. He said, "We don't have long, and then we'll soon all be dead." And there was quiet among the miners. There were slow tears among the miners. There were silent and audible prayers said amongst the miners. One of the miners asked if another one had a pen, and so he wrote on a piece of cardboard a note to his wife and kids, telling them how much he loved them. He put the note in a white plastic bucket, and then he offered the pen to his other workers there, and they too wrote their goodbyes to their loved ones. When nine notes had been placed inside the bucket, they snapped the lid shut, and they pushed it up against the boulder, hoping that one day that it would be found. Another miner grabbed a steel cable from the materials they normally used in working the mine, and he looped it through all of their belts. And he said, "If we're going to die, then we'll do it as a team. We will do this as a family." There was nine men, 200 feet below the surface, unable to dig their way out to freedom, facing the prospect and inevitability of a death in a dark world. But in their true heart of hearts, they knew that there were people above them. And they knew by that rapping, if they could just reach those people, then someone might be able to save them. They didn't have any way of knowing if anyone was actually there that could save them, but they had hope. They had to also face reality. Theirs was a dark world with no real promise of salvation. And today there are people who walk around us every day who see the world the same way as those miners, as a dark and harsh place to live. You know, whenever I think about being on the other end of some calls working at the police department, when I think of some personal failures of my own, when I think of families and people that I see come into the hospital, I think the world is a very cruel and mean place. But the world is very unfair. But I also think that the world is fair, that it's hateful, but it's also loving. It's a very peculiar place that I find myself in on a philosophical level, on a metaphysical level, and even on a religious level. I love our kind. I love human beings because we are very courageous in this peculiar place that we live, that we call reality. A famed atheist, Bertrand Russell, once said that the life of a man is a long march through the night, surrounded by invisible foes, tortured by weariness and pain, toward a goal that few can hope to reach and where none can tarry long. One by one, they march toward a goal that they won't reach very quickly. He says, "Our comrades vanish from our sight, seized by the silent orders of omnipotent death. Brief and powerless is man's life, And on his, and all of his race, the slow and sure doom falls, pitiless and dark. Blind to good and evil, reckless of destruction, omnipotent matter rolls on its relentless way. For man, condemned today to lose his dearest, tomorrow himself to pass through the gates of darkness. It remains only to cherish, ere yet the blow falls, the lofty thoughts, the ignoble, his little day. Man, that's pretty depressing. But there are people all around us, just like Bertrand Russell, just like I feel sometimes, who see their present situation and their future situation as being harsh and dark and frustrating and hopeless. The writer of Ecclesiastes explains to us that the reason the world is so dissatisfying and frustrating is because many have yet to meet God. There the writer tells us that God has set eternity in our hearts. God has given us the innate understanding that this world was not created to be this way. It wasn't created to be unfair and hateful and mean. And so when people see and experience those harsh realities, they are filled with frustration and confusion. This isn't the way that it was meant to be. They sense this world should be filled with light and goodness. And much of what they see is darkness and hypocrisy and emptiness. And that made me think, if God has set eternity in our hearts, maybe that glimpse of eternity was like turning a spotlight onto the harshness of our present world. Paul tells us in Ephesians 5:14 that it is light that makes everything visible. And that makes sense. If you go into a dark room and you turn the light on, you're either going to see a room that is orderly and attractive, or you're going to see a room that is clutter-filled and messy, or perhaps you're going to see just an empty, barren room. And I got to thinking about that and how our world first looked when God exposed it to light. And if you remember in Genesis, when the world was first created in Genesis 1:3, the Bible tells us that God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. If you'd have been present on that first day of creation, what do you think the world would have looked like? Well, the previous verse tells us in Genesis 1:2 that the earth was formless and it was empty. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't filled with life. It wasn't filled with hope. It was formless and it was empty. And that's how much of life seems to many people who live around us today. It seems as though it is empty and formless. They don't see any of the beauty or life or hope. And then you look again there in Ecclesiastes 3 verse 11. It explains, just as God set eternity into our hearts, that he made everything beautiful in its time. If you had been on earth that first day of creation, you would have seen an empty and formless world. But 2 days later, you would have seen flowers and trees and grass. The day after that, you would have seen the sun and the moon and the innumerable stars. Now, the day after that, you would have seen the fish in the water and the birds filling the skies and singing with their songs. And on the sixth day, it would have seemed like a zoo of sorts, as you've seen lions and tigers and bears or lions. And then a little bit later, you would have gotten to see the first human couple. You would have seen a man and a woman, beautiful and pure, undefiled, filled with love for each other, for a love for a world that they had been given, and most importantly, filled with a love for their God. In his time, God has filled the entire earth with beauty and life and hope. He made all things beautiful in his time. And you know that is the promise that God makes to us in Romans 8:28. He gives us that same promise in His time. Not necessarily our time, but He makes all things beautiful. He promises that all things work together for the good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. Now that doesn't say that all things are good. And that doesn't say that everything that happens to us was brought about by God. But it does say that no matter what happens in our lives, whether it is good or whether it is evil, that God is capable and willing to work within the fabric of our lives so that ultimately that we will see the power and love of God. He makes all things beautiful in His time. There are a lot of people in this world that don't see that. They don't see the beauty that God can do in their lives. All they can see is that emptiness, that formlessness. All they can see is what is real to them in that moment. Ecclesiastes 3:11 tells us that they can't see what God can do because they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. Either they reject the things that the Bible and Christians tell them, like Bertrand Russell did, or they've not been exposed to the witnesses of God. They've not heard or they've not understood the stories from the Scripture or the stories of the lives that God has touched. They just can't fathom what God can do for others. They're totally mystified by this concept. There's a story that goes that a very intelligent man was talking to a minister. And the minister told this man why he had begun to preach to begin with. He explained that he had been a terrible alcoholic throughout his 20s and early 30s. But when he became a Christian, God had taken that desire away from him. The other man just looked at the preacher and said, "Is that true? Is that true?" Well, the preacher said, "Of course it was true. If it was true, why would I have told that to you? I've heard of a number of people who have experienced that same sort of freedom from God. But just like that first person, there are so many people that can't fathom how God can change someone like that. It's totally foreign to their way of thinking. And yet, I think that story that minister told stirred that man's imagination. He asked, "Is that true? Can it be true? Would God really do such a thing for one person?" You see, even though he was skeptical, God had placed inside of his heart eternity. God has placed in his heart the hope that there might just be something beyond this mortal world. That there might be someone out there. Someone who could reach down into a darkened world and change lives and rescue us from the darkness and frustration in this present life. Now I've said all of that to say that there are people that we work with every day. Neighbors that we say hello to, relatives that we talk to on a regular basis. And we all know that they're not Christians. Maybe they've even been a little bit hostile towards your faith. Maybe they've been argumentative when it comes to the issue of religion. And when folks become hostile and argumentative, you know, that should put a little bit of joy in our heart. That negativity in their response really is a good thing. It's a mark that they feel the eternity that God has set in their hearts. And you're not going to win over these people by arguing with them. Paul tells Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:23 verses 23-26 to don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know they produce quarrels. And the Lord's servant must not quarrel. Instead, he must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Those who oppose him, he must gently instruct in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth and that they will come to their senses and escape the trap of the devil who has taken them captive to do his will. You see, you don't have to argue anybody into the kingdom. God has planted the seed of eternity into their hearts. And it's that sense of eternity that's been put into their hearts that there's something more to this world than what they can see, what we can see right now. There is something eternal. C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said, if I find myself a desire that this world cannot fulfill, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. That's a pretty logical conclusion. If I'm not satisfied with this life, maybe it's because I was made for a different kind of life. If this world looks dark and dreary to me, maybe it's because there is something better. And as Christians, we've got that something better. The folks around us may not accept the truth right away, but it doesn't matter whether they do or whether they don't, because it is real. What we have, the rest of the world needs. And the only way that they're going to believe that is if that they see that God is real to you and I. They're not going to bother and wait for God to do His thing in their lives if they can't see that God has done His thing in you. If you're the type that wants to complain about everything in your life, they're not going to buy your version of Jesus. If you're always angry, if you're frustrated, or you're down in the mouth, they don't want to buy into that kind of version of Christianity. There are folks out there who live in darkness, who live in hopeless worlds, that are just looking for some proof that tells them that there is something different out there, that there is somebody looking for me. There is someone who can free me from the emptiness of my life. I started this on July 24th, 2002, at about 9:30 p.m. Well, on July 28th, 2002, at about 1 a.m., some 4 days later there in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, those nine miners who were trapped 200 feet beneath the surface of the earth, trapped there in that dark world, unable to free themselves from their own tomb, they realized that they had lost their match with time. They had minutes to live. They had said their goodbyes. They had roped themselves together to face dignity. And then they heard a voice. Can you hear me? And they almost couldn't believe it. They didn't speak for a moment because they thought maybe it was all just an illusion. And then they heard the voice again. Can anybody down there hear me? And they answered, yes, we can hear you. And thus began the rescue of the nine miners who for 3 days had given up hope underneath the ground. It was when they heard that voice that they responded, and they knew for sure that someone was up there. Tonight, there is a voice that calls, and that voice calls you to respond to the gospel of Jesus. And if there's anyone here tonight that needs to respond, we encourage you to do so as together we stand and we sing.